Can members hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, thank you, members. Okay. Members, just want to start the meeting. The chairperson of the portfolio committee will not be able to attend the meeting today. She's attending a family funeral. I've received her apology and other apologies. But then in terms of parliamentary rules, the committee must elect a chairperson to chair in the absence of the chairperson. I will now call on for the election of the chairperson to chair today's meeting. I will hand over to members to elect the chairperson. Thank you.
Can I elect Honorable Maluleke?
Yes, ma'am, you may go ahead.
Okay, I'm Honorable Maluleke. I would like to elect the name of Honorable Fikile Masiku to be the chairperson of the day. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
I am Mahlengwa.
Seconder.
Mahlengwa. I'm supporting election of...
Hey.
Yes. Mahlengwa.
Hey, my network chairperson.
Yes, ma'am.
Can I just kindly note that, you know, I'm actually in town. My network coverage is very bad. It keeps on cutting. And I don't want to, I am in the meeting, but the challenge that I'm experiencing is that my network coverage is very bad. I would have, I had my hand up myself, I would have nominated Honorable Maluleka herself. I don't know whether she is in a good space or not.
No, I'm not in the good space, Honorable Masiku. I think we can continue with Honorable Masiku as the chairperson. When she's off, then somebody will just take over until she gets connected.
Thank you, members. Members have elected Member Masiku, and then there was a seconder. Before I can hand over to Member Masiku, are there any further nominations? Because Member Maluleke, she's also indicated that she's not in the good space. So I will hand over to Member Masiku to continue with the meeting. Thank you, members.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members, and good afternoon to everyone who has attended the meeting. This meeting has been called to receive one item from the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities. And the report that we'll be receiving is on gender responsive planning, budgeting, monitoring and evaluation framework, as well as guidelines, the country gender indicator framework, as well as the gender policy priorities for 2019-2024. All members are welcome. We must also warmly welcome the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities. Honorable members, we'll then do item number two. We'll request Nelisa to take us through if we have received any apologies. I know that she has noted the apology of the chairperson of the portfolio committee, Honorable Member Ngube Ndaba, who has sent a formal apology. Are there any other apologies, Nelisa?
Thank you, Chairperson. I have received two apologies. One from Member Sharif, who could not attend today. And also, no, it's not to his script. Two also from the Minister and the DG, who had prior meetings. They could not attend, but they will be represented by the Deputy Minister and the DDG from the department. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Nelisa. Honorable members, we'll then move on to item number three, which is the briefing from the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities. We note the apologies from ODG as well as the Minister. We'll then request to Deputy Minister to give any introductory remarks, and then we'll request her to hand over to the individual official that has been tasked with doing the presentation on behalf of the department. At the end, I'll hand over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson of the day. I greet you all noon. I hope we are going to have a good Friday afternoon, which is not a best day of working. Honorable members, thank you for this opportunity to present to you for deliberation the work we've done on the gender response planning, budgeting, monitoring, evaluation framework, gender indicator framework, and the gender priorities, which the record later.
Honorable DM.
Parliament. Yes.
DM. I don't know whether it's my network now or it's your network. That is, we can't hear you. DM.
Is it there? Hello? They change the venue quickly and see whether
Honorable members, am I the only one who's not hearing DM properly, or is it DM that's in a position that is not correct? Her network coverage is not good.
You are not the only one, Chair.
No, you are not the only one.
Okay, DM, can you kindly reposition yourself so that we'll be able to hear you?
Yes, as I'm talking to you, I'm going to another usual spot. I hope it's going to be better. Is it better now?
It's a bit better, DM. You may proceed.
Hello?
We can hear you, DM.
Okay, then. I was just thanking honorable members for the opportunity. And let me quickly go there. Honorable members, thank you for this opportunity to present to you for deliberation the work we've done on the gender responsive planning, budgeting, monitoring, evaluation framework, the country gender indicator framework, and the gender policy priorities, which are all interrelated. Parliament in general, and this committee in particular, plays a critical role in ensuring the implementation of the GRPB framework and in realizing our country's women empowerment and gender equality goals. The GRPB framework was adopted by Cabinet on 27 March 2019, and is also an obligation arising from the current 2019 electoral mandate for the sixth administration. It was a response to poor accountability for performance on women's empowerment and gender equality across the state and civil society. You will know, honorable members, from our evaluation report since 1994, we have been very weak when it comes to measuring and accounting on these factors. So we also have had weak institutionalization of gender mainstreaming, with many planning instruments and policies being gender blind. The framework provides a conceptual framework and a clean plan, which cuts across the entire state machinery and civil society. The implementation is premised around 10 pillars, which are focused on the integration of gender priorities at all levels of the country's policy, planning, budgeting, monitoring, evaluation, and auditing systems.
we are pleased to note that though it is still too early, it's the early stages of implementation, fair progress has been made in a number of areas. I will highlight just a few. For the first time in our democracy, the 2019-2024 MTSS includes explicit reference to impact, outcomes, interventions, indicators, and targets relating to women, youth, and disability rights. This gives the department a firm foundation to cascade these indicators into the strategic plan, into their strategic plans and APPs of all government departments and public entities. We collaborated closely with the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation to ensure that the frameworks and guidelines on institutional planning make explicit reference to requirements regarding women, youth, and persons with disabilities. We've analyzed the responsiveness of strategic plans and APPs and provided feedback to DGs through DPME. Together with the National School of Governance, we've developed a training model on GRPB. The pilot of this reached an initial 100 public service managers and received very positive feedback from the participants. National Treasury has begun to address requirements relating to gender responsive budgeting, including requirements and guidelines in this regard in the current MTC guidelines. Based on our inputs, the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation revised National Evaluation Policy Framework approved by Cabinet and made sure it's gender responsive and includes gender across the evaluation cycle. We've developed proposed gender policy priorities for 2019-2024, and as part of the Generation Equality Global Campaign, we will be initiating a bottom-up campaign on what women want and to provide platforms for women to make their inputs on the country policy priorities to ensure gender equality by 2030. We developed the country gender indicator framework, which has served to translate the policy priorities into measurable indicators and to inform the inclusion of priority areas in the planning instruments. We are continuing to focus on advocacy, education, to ensure that no one is left behind, and that we develop a truly gender-responsive public service which is able to effect fundamental transformation in gender relations, improve the lives of women and girls, and take us closer to our goal of gender equality and a non-sexist society. Honorable members, we count on each and every one of us as public representatives to monitor and advocate for compliance, as Cabinet has taken a position that all priority programs, be it gender-based violence and femicide or a program on an economy recovery plan, they should be geolocated as a district development model. So we have an opportunity then to evaluate all the programs at a district development model using the instruments that you are presenting to honorable members today. I thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Honorable members, I'm not sure whether Honorable Masiko has been cut off or what, but let me just take over and say thank you very much, DM, for the kind words and the introduction. So without any waste of time, DM, I'm not sure who's going to present for us today. So let's just go straight to the presentation so that we can have enough time to engage the presentation. Thank you, DM.
Honorable members, I then ask DDG Annette to present the documents that I introduced. Thank you, Honorable
Thank you, DM.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chair and Deputy Minister and Honorable Members. I will present the Gender Responsive Planning, Budgeting, Monitoring and Evaluation Framework. My colleague, Chief Director, Monitoring and Evaluation, Dineo Mako, will present the Country Gender Indicator Framework, and the Chief Director, Policy and Research, Ranji Reddy, will present the policy priorities. I'm going to try to share my screen. I hope it's successful. Okay, is it visible?
Yes, it is.
All right, thank you very much. So this is, we appreciate this opportunity because this is critical, as Deputy Minister has said, in achieving our goals of gender equality. And I think just by way of background, we all know that despite important advances in women's empowerment since the inception of democracy, we still have the majority of girls, women and girls are still subject to poverty, unemployment, gender-based violence, and many other social problems, and that they face multiple and intersecting forms of discrimination and deprivation. We know also, and this is one of the assumptions behind our framework, that women are not homogenous, that inequality and deprivation is based on race, class, gender, spatial location, and so on, that in general, African women are worst affected by these deprivations. We also acknowledge that unpaid care work is a key source of gender inequality, and that women's exclusion from the mainstream economy and lack of access to economic opportunities is also key to their inequality, and is underpinned by patriarchy, unequal gender relations, a legacy of racial oppression, and unequal access to control and ownership of the economy, including land. And we have shared with members, I believe, the 25-year review of women's empowerment and gender equality, which has detailed information in this regard. Why do we need gender-responsive policy, planning, budgeting, monitoring, evaluation, and auditing? As the Deputy Minister has indicated, part of this is achieving our constitutional vision of a non-sexist society, but also to ensure that women's empowerment is not an afterthought, is at the center of public policy, planning, and budgeting, but also to improve the country's performance and to promote inclusive growth and development. We have done research that shows that investing in women is not just a moral imperative, it's also an economic imperative. This framework is also linked to the institutionalization of gender mainstreaming across the state machinery, the broader transformation agenda, the outcomes and results-based approach, as well as the overall government-wide policy planning and prioritization, and obviously critically also the broader public finance and budgetary reforms. Now, in terms of our mandate, I think the committee is well aware of our mandate as the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disability, and we also note that this mandate also derives from multiple instruments at a global, regional and national level. The Sustainable Development, the Beijing Platform for Action, the Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women, as well as the African Union instruments our very own NDP and the South African Policy Framework on Women's Empowerment and Gender Equality. But we part of the underlying principles of this framework is that even though this is the role of the department, every government department, public entity, provinces and municipalities have a mandate to deliver emancipation. We looked also at some of the lessons from South Africa. South Africa has previously had a number of initiatives around gender responsive budgeting primarily. Most of these have lacked sustainability. And in fact, some of them, the members would be aware, were also part of the Portfolio Committee in Parliament, played a very key role. That was around 1995 and similar initiatives. But all of these lacked sustainability, and we also had full buy-in at a political and administrative level. We said that we also acknowledged that individual role players and champions are very key. But part of the strategy is to not embed it with only within one institution or within one department or whatever. But the strategy should be to embed gender-responsive planning and budgeting across the state machinery in multiple institutions, including the administration. Parliament has a critical role to play. Chapter 9, the Commission for Gender Equality, political parties and civil society. There is a need for political support at the highest level as well as technical capacity. External expertise is of value, but it's important to also avoid excessive reliance on consultants and ensure proper skills transfer within the administration to deliberately build technical capacity across the system and ensure that there are accountability mechanisms at all levels. And one of the innovations of that we have is introduced was to also focus on the entire public policy cycle. So not only budgeting, but to influence the policy, the planning, at all levels. And I'll come back to that. We also said that voluntary systems tend to lack teeth and sustainability. So consideration should be given to legislative mechanisms and other mechanisms to incentivize compliance. We have adopted a multidisciplinary approach, drawing from different disciplines, concepts, and practices, including gender studies, evidence-based policy and public policy, public management, and also public finance and performance-based budgeting. Now, the overall approach is basically to say that if we want to improve country gender outcomes, we need to set clear gender-responsive policy priorities, and we need to then ensure that those policy priorities are indeed translated into programs with clear program outcomes, with clear indicators and targets, and that we need to then allocate those budgets to achieve the priorities. Now, this is a typical public policy cycle, starting with the diagnostic, the identification of needs, the gender gaps, also taking into account mandates, policy and programming, budgeting, implementation and expenditure, monitoring and evaluation, as well as performance and expenditure reviews. And based on that, you then adjust your programs. Now, the strategic objectives of the gender-responsive planning budgeting framework are the following. To serve as a catalyst to effect a system-wide paradigm shift towards gender mainstreaming, to ensure that women's empowerment is at the center of public policy priorities and budgeting and accountability, to ensure the allocation of adequate and equitable resources, to enhance the country's overall levels of inclusive growth, and to contribute to our constitutional vision of a non-sexist society. Now, the overall approach, we have found that in some quarters, even still within government, women's empowerment is seen as a social sector issue. We are saying that it cuts across all sectors, and economic empowerment of women is very, very critical. And as our deputy minister had mentioned, the current NTSF has indeed included gender issues across all the seven priorities. We also said we need to promote greater institutional accountability at national, sectoral, and local level, and ensure proper gender-responsive financing, which is transparent. Now, this is the overall concept, theory of change, which has drawn from different components, including the public policy cycle, starting with the needs analysis, but also this is also where we need to take into account the voices of ordinary women and the gender policy priorities from multiple sources. Based on those priorities, planning must then take place with proper indicators, baselines. That's where you get your program design, implementing and monitoring, evaluating and reviewing, although evaluation can take place at any point in the cycle. You know, value for money evaluations, but also drawing on good practice, what works, not just saying this is underachieved, but saying Amatola District has managed to, for example, get 40% of women involved in procurement, and you know, what are they doing right that other districts can replicate? That should then also lead to learning based on that the performance reviews and the evaluations, adaptive management, better program design, better implementation, and that should lead to improved performance and better outcomes for women and girls. This is the gender results effectiveness scale, which we have drawn from the UNDP. It starts from gender negative to gender blind to gender targeted to gender responsive to gender transformative. And our country, most of our plans, we currently gender blind or gender targeted in some cases, but we still, you know, trying to move towards a situation where we transform the gender relations and address gender inequality. So the overall approach was to say, unlike in the 90s, when gender responsive budgeting was introduced, and there was a big push from the parliamentary committee at the time, there was not a planning and monitoring system. But right now, we actually, as a country, have a fairly well developed planning and monitoring and budgeting systems. So we said our strategy is, in the short to medium term, is to mainstream gender within existing national planning, monitoring, evaluation systems, which extend countrywide and are applicable to all national government departments and all provincial government departments, and to some extent to municipalities as well. And the same goes for budgeting systems and procedures. We also said we've developed the country gender indicator framework, which is there to also assist departments to understand, you know, to identify indicators, and in some cases not reinvent the wheel. Always we would draw from multiple evidence and data sources and ensure that our interventions and programs are based on diagnostic and desired outcomes for women and girls. These are the critical role players, and you know, we're saying that we're repeating again, because sometimes we still find that when we meet with departments or provinces, they say, no, but this is the responsibility of the gender focal point. We point out that actually it's a responsibility, and we have strong support. Well, the president has actually been driving this agenda. The president announced in the minister's performance agreements, for example, must include deliverables on gender equality. So we're saying that advancing gender equality is an obligation of all public office bearers, government departments, public entities, and society in general. The critical roles, obviously, the presidency, our ministry, and our department is there as a champion, playing an overall role with regard to strategic leadership coordination. DPME, as minister, as deputy minister also said, plays a key role. The Minister of Finance and National Treasury, the vision is that they must become a center of excellence with regard to gender responsive budgeting. And then other center of government departments, DPSA, StatsSA, COCTA, we'll come back to that. Provinces, we've been doing more and more work with provinces, have an important role to play. and municipalities, particularly with COGTA and mayor's offices playing a leading role. But of course, as mentioned, Parliament had a key role to play, particularly this particular portfolio committee, but also going forward, one would like to see all committees, including the finance and committee, playing an important role with regard to assessing the extent to which departments are indeed allocating budgets to gender equality delivery. And of course, the multi-party women's caucus, where we have already made a presentation that I've already spoken about, CGE. In a number of countries, the civil society also plays a key role, NGOs, and including academic institutions. This is the critical success factors, which I won't repeat. I'm now just going to move on to the implementation plan, and you know, just so that honourable members can see when Cabinet adopted this in March 2019, it did include the adoption of the implementation plan. So I think the first one is around country planning and monitoring. The DPME has been developing mandate papers in recent years, and this sets the basis for the budgeting allocations, and we have also been making inputs there. It was also agreed that the NDP, even though it's a very, very critical document, has particular status, there are components that can be strengthened with regard to the NDP, and the Planning Commission commissioners had also agreed with us on that. The NTSF, ensuring that there are gender outcomes and outputs, and that there's a regular gender of the POA data, and that every outcome performance report. So DPME does performance reports to Cabinet and to the different structures, and we said there shouldn't be any performance report without the inclusion of gender performance. So that should be, there was an integrated planning bill where we had made extensive inputs, where we also provided for the roles of the Minister of Women. The 25-year review, I think we've discussed that, that was an important contribution to understanding how far we have come, but also identifying gaps and priorities ahead. In terms of institutional planning, so country planning, we distinguish between country planning, then that next level is institutional planning, which is basically departments at a national, provincial level, as well as state-owned enterprises, and those are the strategic plans and APPs, and we've specified, you know, what that should include, and we've made good progress there. The medium-term strategic plan is also something that is quite important, and then we also looked at the I've spoken about the APPs, the analysis of the APPs. This was specified. And then we said we need five-year gender policy priorities, and that will be presented today by Ranji, because priorities also are linked, obviously, to the planning instruments, the MTSF, and are drawn from multiple meetings, constitution, the electoral mandate, etc. And so that's very important, and helps to give guidance also to the mainstreaming of gender within plans. The other component, very important, is evaluation, knowledge and evidence. Firstly, the national evaluation system. We said the national evaluation policy framework should be gender responsive, as well as the improvement plans in that regard. Gender responsive guidelines, templates, and then, you know, we indicated integration of gender across the evaluation cycle. And that was included in the revised National Evaluation Policy Framework. So starting with evaluation planning and budgeting, commissioning and undertaking evaluations, data collection and analysis, we find that we still have a serious difficulty with disaggregation of data by sex, age and disability. But also, you know, we did a research project, and we find that sometimes the perspectives of women versus men is unbalanced. And then also the need to deliberately ensure that you prevent hidden biases. And then, of course, the findings and recommendations, the improvement plans, the capacity building, and so on. Also ensuring that there are young women emerging in the evaluation profession. Part of the evaluation knowledge and evidence is also to develop a gender knowledge hub. And we know that this is work that DPME had already initiated, and we said we need to ensure that there's a proper gender component of the knowledge and evidence repository. So this is all in the plan that was adopted by Cabinet. We said let's also mainstream gender within the frontline service delivery monitoring and citizen-based monitoring, undertake gender assessments, include gender sensitivity when the assessments are done and in the rating system. For example, when visits are done to schools, assess how those schools are responding to the needs of girls. In health institutions, police stations, do they have rape kits? And then, of course, MPAT has been changed a bit, but we're also looking at that. With regard to the Department of Public Services Administration, which is the custodian of the Performance Management Development System, we said we can't just say that the ministers, in their ministers' performance agreements, is must be cascaded right down to the DGs. DGs must be accountable and have that in their performance agreements, as well as all levels of the public service. And we have already developed a training module with the National School of Government on capacity building on this. International reporting, this is very much linked to international reporting, so that the data collection, even the gender indicator framework, today will demonstrate that so that we integrate the international indicators where possible. And then, of course, even issues such as the cabinet memo templates, the CS, needs to actually strengthen the gender requirements. Currently, there's reference to vulnerable groups, but sometimes it's just done that the indication is just this will improve lives of women and girls. So the socioeconomic impact assessment also needs to be improved. National Treasury, we had included a whole lot of requirements with regard to gender responsive budgeting, including the budget guidelines. We said that when departments bid for their budgets, they need to include, demonstrate the allocations that are going to benefit women and ensure gender equality. So, for example, and that includes targeted programs as well as disaggregated programs. And we also, we would love to see the Minister of Finance in the medium-term budget policy statement and the national budget speech, even the budget books, to begin to indicate this is the allocation that we are making to women and towards gender equality. And then legislation, it seems that the PME bill, which was still around in 2019, it's unclear what the status of that currently is. But the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disability has indicated its intention to introduce the Wedgie Bill. And we would like to see that as also making the gender responsive planning, budgeting. And then a number of countries, there are countries in the continent that have included gender responsiveness in their Public Finance Management Act. So we are also indicating that that should be considered. Now, I'm not going to go into every, some of it I've already covered, but I think the interest, as the Deputy Minister has mentioned, has explicit gender priorities and, cross-cutting 2024 impacts across the seven priorities. And it's actually very interesting to look at that, those indicators. And the main interest, and it's all one document, so we believe it is mainstreamed, and that's very important. I've spoken about the indicator framework, the mandate paper, the 25-year review, As well as I think we are seeing even in important documents such as the State of the Nation Address, we've seen there's always reference to gender issues. We've developed the implementation guidelines. We've made inputs on the district development model. And I think the one area where we focus quite a lot, in addition to the MTSF, where we made huge inputs, is also the institutional planning. So we made we worked well with DPME in developing the revised framework for strategic plans and APPs. That was given legal effect through the National Treasury instruction. We also made inputs on the guidelines on the implementation of the revised framework. There's a whole annexure that gives greater guidance to departments on how to mainstream gender. We've done guidelines on the assessment of draft strategic plans. We've made inputs into those. We developed an analytical framework to actually analyze the responsiveness, and we're busy talking to departments now because, in fact, we have been for a while because the first draft APPs are due end of October. So we've been having sessions with departments and provinces, and we did previously do an analysis of selected strategic plans. Those are some of the details, and those documents are available. Apart from our own guidelines, I think we have forwarded all of these guidelines as well. The gender-responsive policy priorities, Ranji will present that, and you know, that's also quite important. The evaluation knowledge and evidence, I've spoken about some of the work we have done there. The evaluation policy framework, the guidelines, and we've already done a rapid evaluation of the gender responsive planning budgeting framework, and the development of the knowledge hub, gender knowledge hub, has been initiated. And we also did a monitoring framework for for this particular framework based on the implementation plan, and it consisted of three main parts. Part one for center of government departments, part two for national government departments, and then part three for provinces. We also did a gender analysis of the 2019-20 quarterly performance reports, and we found that they are basically gender blind, and that also showed us that we needed to do a lot more work in working with provinces. Gender responsive budgeting, we've made some good progress, although there's a lot of work still to be done there. And we feel also that Treasury needs to develop its own technical expertise with regard to gender responsive budgeting. International obligations, as I say, we have tried to include those, and we continue to develop international reports, for example, the Beijing Plus 25 report, and most of those I think all of them have also been shared with the honourable members. And then, of course, Parliament, Parliament obviously has a key role to play. And we did make a presentation at the Multi-Party Committee, and we're very happy to be with you today as well. And I've spoken about the legislation. In terms of gender-responsive performance management, as I said, the President did make a commitment to include gender-specific delivery targets in the performance agreements of ministers and premiers and so on. We have established a high-level steering committee on gender-responsive planning and budgeting. In fact, that was established in 2018 and has been meeting regularly. It was disrupted by COVID, but we have resumed it again. And we have a very firm commitment by DPSA to review the PMDS system to ensure greater accountability. We've also increasingly realized that advocacy, awareness, information, education is very, very critical. And that part of it is also within the public service amongst managers and other officials, locating gender-responsive planning budgeting at the center of departments. So driven from the DGs downwards and not only the gender focal points. Gender focal points do have a role, a very important role, but we're saying it should be driven from the ministers, the DGs, and we... Even though we've had very strong support from Cabinet and the DG clusters, this hasn't always translated into implementation. So implementation we need to develop the competencies and just keep on working. We've done presentations to many, many officials, but we realized also that it takes time for people to really embrace. But we've had good feedback. The NSG module was an initial 100, as indicated by Deputy Minister, and it seemed to work very well. So I think I'm going to leave it there. That was just an overview of the framework. Thank you very much. I'll now hand over to Danao. Danao, do you want to share for yourself? Sorry, Honourable Chair.
I can't see that up, but we can continue to do.
Okay, that's fine. So, all right. There you go.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair, Honourable Deputy Minister, and Honourable Members. My name is Danao Mako. I'm the Director General has indicated. I will be taking you through the gender country, the country gender indicator framework itself. So in terms of the screen that has been projected, is around the purpose of the country gender indicator framework, which supplements the gender responses planning, budgeting, monitoring and evaluation framework, and continues to strengthen the government's ability to measure progress toward gender equality and empowerment of women, utilizing the existing government results-based management and performance management system, including training and policy cycle. Regular reporting for of the country gender indicator will supplement much needed information, largely performance information. I am not able to inform planning, budgeting and evaluation processes in the public sector. The country gender indicator framework recognizes that there are trade-offs between having a comprehensive and disaggregated set of data of gender indicators and reporting burden in place on the country government department and agencies. And this is just a continuation of a whole lot of reporting cycles that are there that we need to manage in terms of the reporting against the country gender indicator framework. In terms of how the South Africa country gender indicator is organized, we're looking at it from a result-based management where the key indicators and targets along the result chain are based on the theory of change, looking at component of implementation from input, program outputs and activities with a focus on documents or information from the NDP, MTSS, as well as sector plans, departments and provincial program performance. Then further there is look at the component around results, which we take to outcomes, around the program outcome, the gender, South African gender outcomes, intermediate and ultimate, as well as the impact, with a greater focus around the development indicators coming from the SDG, the AU 2026, the SADC gender and development protocol, as well as the national development plan. So that is the South African gender indicator framework. We can continue to the next. So as I've indicated, the key domain for the gender indicator framework has two components. We have the development indicators as well as the program performance indicators. And largely around the development indicators, we're looking at indicators of country gender development impact and national outcomes, and with a bigger focus on the SDG indicators, the AU, SADC and National Development Plan, gender policy priorities and indicators, as well as gender, South African gender policy priorities. So similar, projection of how the country gender indicator is being organized. And further to that are the program performance indicators. And largely here, we're focusing on key sector indicators, looking at economic empowerment, financial inclusion, employment, ownership, infrastructure. We're looking at social sector, basic services, health and education, also governance, agency and voice in terms of representation and participation, and also looking at indicators, performance indicators coming from provincial and local levels, and other indicators that are available for use in terms of that, as well as the specific, which are customized or specific to province and local government. The next component is the outline of the indicators that are currently contained in the current country gender indicator. So we have a component of global indicators, looking at the Beijing Declaration and Platform for Action. We have about 52 of this indicator in the country gender indicator, covering various sectors, the economic sector, the education sector, health sector, public life, and decision making, human rights, for women and girls and girl children. So there's about 19 indicators around the economic space. We have 12 in the education, 11 in health. We have about 5 in both public life and human rights. So those are the number of indicators we're covering in the Beijing, from the Beijing Platform for Action. And a component of the other indicators that are included at the development indicator level is this sustainable development goal, the SDG. So we're covering a broad range of those indicators, excluding goal 6, goal 7, and goal 9. However, we're covering goal 1 around the ending of poverty, ending of gender, ensuring health, healthy lives, ensuring inclusive and equitable quality of education. We're also covering indicator around achieving gender equality and empowerment for all women and girls. That's the greater indicator that has a focus on gender equality and women empowerment with 14 indicators. And then also goal 8, where we're looking at promote and sustain inclusive and sustainable economy with 7 indicators, as well as where we're looking at the goal to reduce income inequality within and among countries. So there is one indicator that we have included in the country and the indicator framework. And further, we still have in the sustainable development goal, if we move to the next slide, we also covering goal 11, putting 3 indicators from goal 11, and then add goal 12, goal 14, 15, and 17, we have not, there aren't any indicator for consideration in terms of the gender, the country gender indicator, and then we've considered goal 11 with 1 indicator coming from there, as well as goal 16, promoting peace and inclusive society. We also have put 6 indicators. In total, from the SDG, we have about 53 indicators considered or included in the country gender indicator framework. And in terms of the regional indicator, we have about 83 indicators coming from the African Union and the Federal Commitment indicators, with all of the 12 commitments that are in the FEDEC and African Union commitment indicators. Looking at commitment 1, we're carrying about 8 indicators. Commitment 2, peace and security, is about 3 indicators, and commitment 3, child soldiers, have 4. Commitment 4, around gender-based violence, we also have 4 indicators. Commitment 6 and 9, human rights for women, will have 5 indicators. Commitment 7, land, property, and inheritance rights, we have 2 indicators in terms of education. There's 2 around commitment 10. We also have, in terms of the ask powers, we have 2 indicators, commitment number 11, fund for women, we have 2 indicators, and commitment on reporting, we have 1. So in total, we have about 33 indicators. And further, in terms of the Africa Gender Development Index, we have about 36 indicators that we've put there. So we're looking at 3 components, which is the social power, economic power, as well as the political power included in the country gender indicator framework. Okay. So in terms of the SADC protocol on gender and development, this is an agreement that was adopted by all the SADC members to advance gender equality and women empowerment. We're covering about 23 indicators from the category of governance, we cover in three, education, there's three indicators. From economy, five, sexual and reproduction health, we have three indicators. In still health, we're looking at HIV and AIDS, there's three indicators that we carry there. And in terms of media, we're looking at about six indicators within the country, gender indicator framework. So bringing it home in terms of the national indicators within the country gender indicator, we're having about 21 what we call output indicators. All in all, in the MTSS, we have about 34 indicators, which also include the outcomes indicators. And the indicators, they cut across all the seven priorities. So with priority one on the capable state and ethical and development state, we have about two output indicators in terms of economic transformation and job creation, that's four indicators. In terms of priority three, education, skills and health, there's three. And these are the cost-cutting indicators in the MTSS. And then consolidating social wage, which is priority four, we're also covering about four output indicators. And in terms of the social, the special integration and human settlements and local government, priority five, we're covering three indicators. And social cohesion and safety committee, we're covering four. And the last priority, which is priority seven, there's one indicator that we're also bringing into the country, gender indicator framework. So this is the actual list of the indicators that we've pulled from the cross-cutting of the MTSS to include in the country gender indicator framework. I'm just gonna, maybe, I don't know whether to go through each and every indicator, but largely we're looking at the indicators that are led by the department is around assessing the level of implementation of the gender, youth and disability responses, training, budgeting, monitoring, intervention, policies and legislation. So that is led by our department. We also have various number of indicators that are there to assess an outcome on gender, youth and disability responses, planning, budgeting, monitoring and evaluation and auditing that is institutionalized across government. And we're looking at the number of government entities implementing the framework itself. We're also looking at the number of performance agreements of executive authority and accounting officer that are responsive to the priorities of women, youth and persons with disabilities. And further, another indicator is the number of national government department strategic plans and APP, which includes the priorities of women, youth and persons with disabilities. And then further, in terms of priority two, the indicators that are covered around the cross-cutting in the MTSS, in terms of increased economic participation, ownership, access to resources, opportunity and wage. We're looking at a proportion of youth, women and persons with disability that are benefiting from the economic transformation, a percentage of professional procurement spent by sex, age and disability. And I think this is one of the key indicators that has been set through in terms of 40% procurement for women, 30 to 40% for youth, as well as 7% for persons with disability. And then percentage funded by sex, age, and disability also, looking at the funding coming likely led by the Department of Small Business Development, as well as looking at issues of land led by Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development, where we're looking at percentage of hectares of land distributed by sex, age and disability. And in terms of priority two, there's three indicators that we have included in the country gender indicator framework, looking at improved education and health outcomes. We're looking at HIV prevalence rates by gender, age and disability. We're looking at percentage of teenagers reached through intervention program by gender or by sex, age and disability, as well as level of mainstreaming in targeted program by gender, age and disability in terms of priority two. Moving to priority four, the indicators that we have, there's about four indicators that have been included, which is percentage of indigenous women and girls in teacher one, two, three, farm schools and special schools, TVET colleges, public universities receiving free sanitary towel. That indicator is also led by the department with contribution coming from departments such as National Treasury, DTI, and higher education. Then there's also in terms of the outcome on increased access to development opportunity for children with and parents and guardians. We're looking at a percentage of early multi-sexual screening conducted on all children between the age of 0 and 8. We're also looking at the number of family caring for children and others with disability who have access to well-defined basket of social support services by 2024, and then a number of persons with disability receiving personal assistance services supported by 2024. Looking at Quality 5, we're also looking at 3 indicators in facilitating the outcome on increased access to land reform, housing safety, safe living environment. We're looking at a percentage shared by gender, age and disability of hectares of land for redistribution, restitution, tenure reform and access to title deeds, which is led by the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development, and also percentage accessing housing by gender, age and disability, as well as level of compliance with universal design norms and standards. So that is in terms of priority 5. In terms of priority 6, in facilitating the outcomes on level of marginalized stigmatization and discrimination and violence against women, girls and persons with disability, the reduction of that, we're looking at 4 indicators. Level of implementation of the gender-based violence femicide council, which is led by our department, the level of implementation of the NSP, also internal to the department, and percentage of disability-related complaints and investigation where reasonable accommodation measures were provided, as well as percentage reduction in complaints, investigation and loss of life. So that is in terms of priority 6, social cohesion and safe community. And then the last priority we're covering, that's one indicator in terms of women, youth and persons with disability empowered and gender equality advanced through multilateral forums and engagement. And compliance, the indicator is multilateral engagement and treaty report, which is led by the department together with DEPCO. So these are the cross-cutting indicators that we put into the country gender indicators. However, we have found that there are other mainstream indicators that are in the broader MTSS, and we have also brought those into the country gender indicator framework. And we're still, selecting, some of the key ones to supplement the already cross-cutting indicators. And in terms of monitoring and reporting mechanisms, as a department, we are working with the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation to monitor the progress on the mainstreaming of gender across government departments. And I think the previous presentation has really touched into the extent in which we are working with DPME on the mainstreaming of gender across government departments. And this will be done by a collection of information from various departments using the country gender indicator framework that supplements the gender responsive planning, budget monitoring and evaluation framework. And there's also various instruments that or reports that we'll also be assessing to find more information in line with the selected indicators. In case that the data that is collected by DPME is not sufficient to provide us with the actual performance. And then regular reporting will actually supply much needed information in informing planning, budgeting and evaluation processes in the public sector, and we'll also have an understanding of the extent to which the turnaround or the outcomes of women, youth and persons with disability are achieved. We'll continue the department to collect data or look at the entire data management process around collecting, collating, validation, verifying and analyzing data, gender disaggregated information from various systems, including the DPME system, so that we can then make a much better inferation in terms of the performance against the selected indicator in the country gender indicator framework. And we'll definitely draft the report and we will also triangulate that report with other existing data source And the report will be presented to various departments to resolve queries before finalization and also opt for some improvement where possible. And the report will be included, will include identify areas of strength and weaknesses as well as recommendations for remedial action. In conclusion, the report will be tabled in the decision-making structures. This will include the cluster systems as well as taking the report to cabinet where possible. In concluding the presentation itself, we are saying now at 26 years in our democracy, progress made on women emancipation and gender equality is still minimum, but you know, there is some achievement, but still a long way to go. In terms of the framework itself, it does provide critical opportunity to drive performance on gender equality and empowerment of women and improvement in the lives of women and girls. Indeed, got good progress at national level by center of government departments such as our department, Department of Women, Youth, Persons with Disability, as well as Department of Training, Monitoring and Evaluation. And not to repeat what has already been said, there is strife that is very visible within the MTSF, within the planning framework, although there are some lag by departments in responding. There is a need for a broad-based collaboration and support to ensure that the reality is realized fairly soon in terms of the change around women empowerment, gender equality, youth development, as well as realizing the rights of persons with disability. And there is the last conclusion that now is the time for a gender responsive delivery and results. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Danielle. We'll now hand over to Ranji Reddy, who will present on the gender policy priorities.
Thank you, DDG. Good evening, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Deputy Minister, and Honourable Members of the Committee. I'm going to screen. Someone is showing it. I don't know if it's being seen.
No, we can't see it.
Can you see it now?
Now we can see it.
Okay, thank you. So, Honourable Members, much of the issues that I will be raising have already been covered by DDG as well as Dineo, but this is the basis on which the framework is built, as well as the monitoring process and mainstreaming that the department should be promoting will be based on what has come out in terms of the identification of key gender policy priorities for the five-year period and up to 2030 and with longer-term effects. Just very quickly, in 2018, the department undertook a 25-year review of progress made on women's empowerment and gender equality in the country. And from those findings, we were able to extract what have been some of the strides, positive strides that we have made as a country, but where are there still gaps? And we found there were many. And what do we need to focus on going forward? So we, from that, and together with all the other areas from which we pulled priority issues, we have developed a document, but this is ongoing work because it needs now to be engaged on at different levels. And as the Deputy Minister had indicated, we wanted a bottom-up approach, and we will be able to take this forward using a number of mechanisms. The first issue that I want to focus on is that it was key in setting the gender agenda from 2020 up to 2025, and it influenced our planning documents in the country, but it also will look at us meeting that international goal of moving towards the SDGs in 2030, as well as achieving gender equality by 2030. So the whole concept is about placing women at the center of socioeconomic transformation. Of course, this has never been a new concept. This has been, you know, a concept all the while with all the women's struggles in the country. It has been about placing women at the center. And we're looking at how do we avoid, you know, continuing what has not been working for the country, resulting from gender-blind policies, gender-blind plans and budgets, programs that don't take women's issues into consideration, and interventions that are planned are treated in a gender-neutral way. So we are saying that gender policy priorities must be considered when we look at all of that. We've drawn from a number of sources, as the DDG has indicated. The 25-year leave view, we looked at the electoral mandate, we looked at the MTSF framework from the previous year, and then we looked at, you know, the draft framework, and we made sure that within the seven national priorities of the sixth administration, we were able to integrate our issues very, very carefully. And as the DDG said, it's actually a mainstreamed document. The State of the Nation address gave us a lot of issues that we needed to look at. Minister's budget vote speech, and then over the last few years, the number of engagements we've had in terms of dialogue, civil society meetings, you know, in various forums, we were actually capturing what women were saying about the gaps and the challenges and the lived realities versus what we would think is progress, but the lived reality was showing otherwise. Priorities also emerge from the global, the continental, the regional instruments and policies, and these are policies and instruments to which we are a state party. And then there's other evidence from civil society protests, civil society writings, research reports, research findings. They've all helped us to come together into that document. The priorities actually feed into the following seven national priorities. I won't go through each one. They've been mentioned. And what we're saying is that the precondition for success also includes issues such as energy, water, infrastructure, and these are some of the issues that might be contained within the main MTSF part and not necessarily brought into the area where we are the cross-cutting issue. However, they need to be engendered, but also they have an impact on the lives of women, youth, and persons with disabilities. The priorities from the global, regional, and levels, we looked at the Sustainable Development Goals. We looked at the Beijing Declaration and Platform for Action, including the 25-year report that we did. We looked at the CEDAW, which is the Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women. We reported the combined second, third, and fourth In 2011, we have submitted our fifth periodic report, and from there, you also are able to gauge. We, of course, looked at the Agenda 2063 from the African Union and also the gender strategy, but the solemn Declaration on Gender Equality in Africa that was adopted in 2004. We look at the SADC Gender and Development Protocol, and then a number of the other national documents. But very importantly, in the last year has been the Generation Equality Campaign that has emerged at the UN level. So it's a global campaign, and it's actually setting out very clear priorities for the next 10 years so that by 2030, we should have actually achieved gender equality. That gives us just 9 years. And then South Africa is the chair of the AU, so deriving from the president's commitment at the AU level as chair, it's also driving our gender policy priorities. The problem statement in a nutshell is that in spite of all of the advances, and there are lots of advances we've made in the country, but majority of women and girls still are subjected to poverty, increasing levels of poverty, to unemployment and increasing levels of unemployment, and then inequality and growing inequality. Women and girls are still subjected to the system of patriarchy, to misogyny, discriminatory social norms, and majority of the women find that they actually remain subjugated by these discriminatory social norms. It prevents women and the nation from realizing full potential. And you know that arising from all of these, one of the second pandemic right now is the gender-based violence, the scourge of gender-based violence. There's still gender discrimination that's ongoing. We've seen it in some of the CGE reports that have emerged. And there are a number of other social problems that are arising or continuing to exist. We see women, a lot of women, majority of the women who remain excluded from the economy, excluded from society in many different ways, and even sometimes at the political sphere. So we need to address a lot more issues than we have done so far. We look at the inequality and deprivation that women experience, and it's different for different women. And it's based on the race of women and girls. It's based on the class within a race group as well. It's based on gender and sexual identity, spatial location, whether you are urban, rural, whether you are informal or better off developed area. It all impacts on lives of women and girls. And then we find that Black women, especially African women, and particularly young women, and those living in rural areas, seem to be more affected by poverty issues, by unemployment, inequality, access to services. And so we find that as much as we've made advances, there's a lot of work still to be done. We look at what did we draw from the chairship of the African Union. President has been speaking about the issue of mainstreaming gender into the African Continental Free Trade Area Agreement, which is fundamentally driving economic empowerment of women on the continent. He's also looked at other aspects of the economic empowerment of women on the continent, and we can tie it particularly to what is driving at the global level in terms of procurement. And President is pushing 30% globally, 40% in the country in terms of the preferential procurement spend on women. President has also been able to get the heads of the member states to agree to declaring the next 10 years as the AU decade of economic empowerment and financial inclusion of women. We find that the president, together with other political and other presidents, have committed to driving and decreasing gender-based violence on the continent. And now towards that, he's committed that within his chairship, he would start or innovate the development of an African Union Convention on Violence Against Women and Children. And much of that work has already begun by the department. So these have given us some of the priority issues. Very quickly, through the generation equality, and as mentioned, the president, together with other countries, are driving the Action Coalition on Economic Justice and Rights for Women and Girls for the next 5 years and then probably up to 2025 as well. Now, in terms of that, as I mentioned, we are driving the preferential procurement at a global level at 30%, and minimum in South Africa is 40%. We're also looking at, in terms of that process, of driving a global protocol on procurement, in you know, so that it's one of South Africa's blueprint actions. In terms of financial services for women, a president is also pushing the issue of digital financial services and funding for women businesses. We are also pushing the third issue is the world of work and women's leadership in the world of work. And the whole idea is that we want a gendered economy. And then even at the AU level, the president is promoting quite vigorously the issue of digital IDs for women. There is a special focus globally in terms of economic justice and rights that is on the care economy. And the care economy is looking at not just issues of women as health workers or social workers, but as also looking at the unpaid care work of women and the issue of narrowing the pay gap between men and women in the workplace. So you can see that our priorities are coming out. And then the ILO Convention 190 on violence in the workplace needs to be ratified by member states. And even South Africa is working towards this, but the idea is to also promote this universal ratification of the convention. So, honourable members, the priorities on which we have identified and been working on was used towards the MTSF, and it's coming through very clearly. So, in a nutshell, I'm going to present to you very quickly what was captured in a capable, ethical, and developmental state. We look at the public service, and in terms of that, you include women empowerment, gender equality in performance agreements. You look at child support to be deducted. Now, this is particularly public service where they don't pay, so we want it to be deducted from salaries. That was what we were getting from women in terms of maintenance defaulters. We want equal representation of women in management levels. We found that actually we go up and down in this regard, and in the last year or two, we've slid down on the number of women DGs. So we need to look at all of these issues. At the political decision making, we are making advances in some areas. In some areas, we're stagnant. In others, we tend to go up and down. We really need to have active measures to achieve 50-50 parity. And it's across all spheres, but very much so in the private sector. National gender machinery, this is also an area of weakness in the last few years. We need to look at revitalizing, reviewing it, strengthening the Commission for Gender Equality, strengthen the location of the national gender machinery in terms of the focal points or what used to be the Office of Status of Women in the Premier's offices, and move it into local government structures as well. There's been a huge weakness in this aspect, even in terms of focal points. So we need a clear model of that, and we need to build a social compact with the different sectors, including the LGBTQIA plus sector, women with disabilities sector, women in rural. We need to really focus on looking at women in the various sectors and not treating women as as a homogenous group. In terms of a legislative review, we're looking at the Women Empowerment and Gender Equality Bill coming back into development finalization. But we need to look at what laws are still there that are discriminatory in nature and that also might promote practices that you know, can easily become discriminatory, and we need to tighten those. As we see the three bills that are currently in Parliament to tighten gender-based violence, we need to harmonize our legislation, particularly in terms of the Marriage Act, the age of marriage, and that process I think started towards the end of last year. We've done this one already. The integrated planning bill, the preferential procurement bill. We've made input, but we've got to keep tracking so that it's actually legislating the 40% minimum target. And then there's something that we might want to consider as women in this country, is the issue of microfinancing legislation in order to promote small businesses, women in informal traders, etc. And then we really need to, as a country, look at the situation of the legislation on sex work, or some want to insist on calling it prostitution. It's been on the agenda. It keeps coming up in the dialogue, and women are seriously calling for a consideration on this aspect. And then in terms of gender responsive planning, policy and budgeting, DDG has gone into length. So I won't focus too much on that. But one of the things that we really need to look at, honorable members, is the South African National Policy Framework on Women's Empowerment and Gender Equality, developed in the from 1997, adopted by Cabinet in 2000, and has not really been reviewed. But there's been evolutionary changes in the country since then, and there's a misalignment. We really need to look at that process and how do we take it forward. Moving on into the second priority area, on economic transformation and job creation, we looked at the location of women in the center of economic transformation in terms of equitable access to ownership, control, management, and participation. We want to look at women's access to productive resources, and this includes land. Improved access to ownership and control of this land. In other words, not just getting the land, but are they able to make decisions about this land and what use it is. The issue of title deeds is in the MTSF, and we need to make sure by working with the department that women are accessing the title deed and are getting security of tenure on land. There's a call for more support to women farmers and to move small women farmers into the bigger sector. Then we're looking at the employment opportunities for women, and we need to look more into the fields that were previously male-dominated, and what are the incentives that exist to draw women into employment, but also into businesses in terms of manufacturing, mining, petroleum, the petroleum industry, minerals, etc. And then we have to look at this issue of unpaid labor. And we don't have a policy position as a country, and we need to develop one. And we really need to look at whether it should be an issue that must contribute to the gross GDP. So there's a lot of issues within the economic area. Expanding job creation, preferential procurement, package of support for women-owned enterprises, and they are listed in there. Gender-sensitive workplace transformation. There are two issues. One is about women's employment and upskilling women into higher positions, and as well as addressing the violence that takes place within the workplace and other discriminatory factors. So that's a huge issue that's currently on the table. We need to look at the fourth industrial revolution. COVID-19 frog leaped us into the fourth industrial revolution. But based on the inequities that there are between different women across various sectors in the country, we need to work on how do we make sure that all women are brought in some way, in some form, into the fourth industrial revolution? And how do they become innovators in the fourth industrial revolution? And we need to look at public employment programs, the public service as well, in terms of hiring women and just not hiring them at the low skilled, low level positions. The third priority area is skills, education, skills and health. And here we're looking at access of girls and women to quality education through the system, including financial support. So we look at issues of NSFAS, etc. Illiteracy, and how do we eradicate it? ECD is a challenge, particularly down the COVID-19. We need to look at it in terms of universal access, and then how does it enable women in terms of addressing that unpaid care work and decreasing the burden of unpaid care work, but increasing their opportunity for taking on other for economic employment, but also for other activities. We need to look at improved results in the secondary primary schooling, but we need to look at matric and what does it mean in terms of physical science, mathematics, biology, and why are girls not doing as well as boys, yet more girls might eventually matriculate. And that then gets taken into post-matric level, so we need to work with issues of higher education and look at issues of bachelor's degrees, master's, and as you go higher up into the PhD, from master's to PhD, you'll find the men once again overtake the huge number of women with bachelor's degrees. However, we also need to look at where are these degrees? Why are they not in the STEM areas, which is science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and how do we promote that? And we need to look at the issue of, we found in our statistics that between men, young men and young women, that more young women are discouraged work seekers. So not in employment or educational institutions, and that there's a high number of young women. So we need to look at that issue as well. And then how do we escalate STEM education, career pathing, and how do we remove barriers, particularly ones of gender-based violence at schools, at tertiary level institutions, and of course in the greater society, but it impacts on young women and girls. The issue of teenage pregnancy, it actually forces young girls to be mothers when they are children themselves, but it also disrupts their educational pathway, and it contributes to their increasing unpaid care work at a very early age. So there's a number of issues there, but also it is resulting in dropouts. And so the re-entry of these girls into the system, what is happening with them? Are they able to re-enter? We don't have sufficient data on that, and we may want to look at that. And then, of course, the sanitary dignity process and looking at universal access to sanitary products, but also to the dignity associated with it in terms of the wash facilities, in terms of access to the toilet and to water, etc. Then in terms of the health system, we need to look at the life expectancy of women is higher than men, but maternal mortality is reducing, but we really need to concentrate on bringing it down much further. We must focus on the nutrition of mothers and newborn babies in the first 1,000 days. We must decrease adolescent birth rate, which is what I was talking about as teenage pregnancy. And of course, we found that young women's maternal mortality rates were increasing. So we need to look at that. And then the issue of young women still being very vulnerable to HIV and AIDS and other STIs. And then the sexual and reproductive health and rights of young women. We must never take our eye off this process. It's got so many related issues with it. And then the sanitary dignity I've spoken about, and then mental health services. We need to, there's a growing call for the country to look at the issue of mental health services. And we may want to begin to see how do we look at this as well as the other issue of psychosocial services. We need to broaden access to prevention of cancers. It's at an extremely high level, certain cancers in women, in young women, and some of it is related to, like the HPV is related to sexual activity. I've spoken about mental health services. We've got a very good legislation on safe abortion. But for some unknown reason, there's always in the country a growing number of illegal abortions. And we need to ask ourselves, why does this still continue? And then we want to promote healthy lifestyles. South Africans are fat. South African women tend to be overweight and under-exercised, and we need to promote that. We are actually engaging with the Department of Sport, Arts and Culture at the moment on their women and sports policy that they're drafting. We are working with them, and it's such an interesting area that tends to get neglected. Moving on to the fourth policy priority, it's the social wage through reliable quality basic services. And in this one here, we wanted to focus on the fact that, food security, food insecurity is an issue. Growing hunger is an issue in the country, and increasing levels of poverty for women. So there's a whole lot of issues that are in here that needs to be looked at. And then, of course, we need to look at other social protection issues for low-paid workers and informal workers, such as parental leave, etc., maternal benefits, paternal benefits. And then we need to look at how do we make more women economically resilient so that...
DPG? DPG, can we just try and summarize some of the slides that are remaining? I'm looking at time. I'm sure that honorable members will be having a number of questions that they would like to ask on the three presentations. So we need to also allocate enough time for the question and answer comment session for the honorable members. So can we just summarize the slides that are remaining? Because I'm sure that most members have read the detailed presentations that have been sent to us.
Okay.
Honorable Chair. Yeah, Ranji will just start wrapping up. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks, DDG. My apologies. I'll just skim through. So in terms of five, we're looking at the spatial integration, and we're looking at how, in terms of the planning for human settlements, and how does it affect women, and how does it affect women with disabilities, and looking at the issue of wash facilities, but also toilets, that doesn't endanger women's lives. The issue of local government, a lot of it will be looking at working with the district development model, but the issues are listed. The social cohesion, a big part of this one, is on gender-based violence, but there's also issues of other discriminatory factors that affect other sectors like the LGBTQI. I will just skim through. Social cohesion, we constantly get the issue of patriarchy and harmful practices that are arising that needs to be addressed going forward. That's gender-based violence and femicide, and there's a whole process around that. A better Africa and a better world, in terms of international relations, I think DDG has spoken about this. It's our work on a number of platforms, globally, regionally, and sub-regionally. And then we also look at reporting. So in conclusion, honorable members, we require clear setting of policy and programming priorities. We need to identify the outcomes, target interventions, indicators, and baselines to meet these outcomes in 5 years, in 10 years, and longer. So we are of course, as a department, looking at how do we mainstream and how do we monitor that mainstreaming that is happening so that these priorities are being addressed in some form or the other. I do apologize, honorable members. I do tend to talk too much. Thank you.
Thank you very much, colleagues, for the presentation. DM, thank you very much for the introductory remarks, and thanks to the colleagues or the entire departmental team for the presentation. I think we definitely know that we as a country are measured by our budget and how it allocated its resources for women, the youth, and the children. So for us, these presentations are quite important. I will then hand over to the honorable members to ask questions on the presentations that have been made before us, as well as comments that they are having. I will note hand, but I think what is also important that we should raise as a committee, DM, is that you really don't know what the status of the framework is. You know, in various sections of the document, it's still referred to as a draft framework. We know that on page 7, it indicated that following consultations with stakeholders, the framework will be submitted to Cabinet for consideration. So the question that we are asking is that if this framework has not been finalized or approved, what are the implications for implementation and timeframes as outlined in the document? So those are some of the important questions that we're asking ourselves, as well as the terminology that is used at DDG. You are having words such as should and would that are appearing across the document, you know, as opposed to terms like will and must, because for us, it shows a certain level of binding status of the document. So, you know, generally you would ask if, you know, this document or the framework really does have a teeth. But I'll hand over to honorable members to ask. I can see the hand of honorable Mpiti. I see the hand of honorable Masondo, as well as the hand of honorable Ngobo. And we'll take them in that order. Are there any other hands?
Yes, Masengwa.
Okay, Masengwa, you are noted. I'm also seeing the hand of Mansonti. I can see your hand, Mansonti.
Thank you.
You are noted. Okay, Honorable Maluleke. Okay, Honorable Maluleke, I can also see your hand. So it's going to be Honorable Mpiti, Honorable Masondo, Honorable Ngobo, Honorable Mamhlengwa, Honorable Mamsonti, and then Honorable Mam Joyce, and then we'll end with Honorable Mgweba. In that order, colleagues.
Thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity, and a very good afternoon to colleagues on the call. Chair, I'm really going to try to be fast because I think this was a very lengthy document that we needed to go through and to also apply our minds and to understand exactly what's being said. And I think, you know, in the general space, this is a very great step that the department is taking to mainstream these issues and make sure that, you know, our executive is really bringing some life to these challenges that our country is facing, particularly as it affects women in this country, as it affects young people, as well as people and persons living with disabilities. But I am concerned, Deputy Minister and the department, by a few things, and I just would like some clarity. I'll try to go through it as quick as possible, but I'm concerned, firstly, that it's not clear exactly, you know, what are the targets and the indicators that departments who will be introducing this framework within their own department are required to do, and how exactly they are required to monitor and evaluate these particular targets. And so I wonder to myself, do these departments from this particular framework, are they able to deduce what they should be doing and what they're responsible for within their department. Secondly to that, I also feel that, you know, there's a lack of synergy between how this framework connects with youth and persons living with disabilities. I almost, you know, when I read through the different phases that have been presented in the report, almost feel like it only just addresses gender. And so I don't understand, or at least I'm finding it very difficult to understand how youth and persons living with disabilities is actually featuring in the document. In fact, it just looks like they've just been added. But, you know, when you look at the phases, there's no clear indication that speaks to what are the targets for youth? What are the targets for persons living with disabilities? And so when the mainstreaming mentions at the beginning that, you know, it's going to look at youth and persons living with disabilities, but then when you get to the phases, it actually only just refers to gender, then I think there's a bit of misalignment that is happening there. So just something to think about as well. Looking at the phases, again, the same issues rise up for me. You're looking at the budgeting phase. Then the budgeting phase, we're not sure exactly who's supposed to monitor the budget allocations. Is it officials within this department? Is it officials within those departments? What is the responsibilities of those officials? You know, when you look at, for example, it speaks about the gender inclusion on the National Treasury database. Who's going to be making sure that it's included? Who's going to be monitoring that particular database? What type of conversations have happened with Treasury over the gender inclusion over the database? And also, I think, you know, these questions are coming from a point where, you know, as a committee, we had raised on a number of occasions the fact that the Senatory Dignity project failed because there was a lack of uniformity that existed between the provinces. And so the department's plan and how it was actually supposed to roll out these particular initiatives, sanitary dignity project, was not actually unfolding and rolling out in the different provinces in the manner that it was supposed to. And so there was a lack of uniformity, there was a lack of the amount of budget allocations that were made to provinces. And so there was a bit of alignment. So I wonder to myself, how is this going to be different? What steps has been identified to ensure that this framework doesn't just become a talk show or another document that is just being a rubber stamp document that can be used to say, well, there is a framework. If the framework does not do what it's supposed to do and has meaningfulness, then it really doesn't, it's useless. And so we need to investigate how exactly it's going to be different. You're looking at the monitoring phase as well. There's a checklist that has been provided there for us to look at. But again, the same question arises. Who's implementing the checklist? What happens if departments are not going to implement that particular checklist? What are the repercussions? How are we going to handle departments who are not implementing this particular thing? And who's the person in charge? Who's the authority in charge that we need to also be looking at? The evaluation phase, I'm just, you know, just pointing out these things because they're very important. Again, we're talking about the National Evaluation Policy Framework. Who's responsible? You know, what happens if it's not implemented? Is there a consequence management? What type of relationships will be existing with these departments to make sure that we get these things off the ground? Again, who's the person in charge? Is it the accounting officer? Is it the CFO? Is it the DDG? We need to know those specifics, because if there's no person that has been made responsible, has received the ownership of this framework within those departments, then in fact, the framework becomes useless. Who's collecting the data to monitor and evaluate the success of the framework? Is it officials within the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities, or is it officials in the other department? We need to know. On the auditing phase, you know, when you read through the documents, you see the fact that a lot of responsibility is put on the Auditor General. And so what type of bilaterals have happened between the department and the Auditor General to prepare them and to say that this is what we expect you to assist us with. What is the department's role in the auditing phase? Because, you know, it seems as if everything is with the Auditor General. And I think these questions are fundamentally important because they go into the nitty-gritties that I think remain unanswered for me at this current stage as to who exactly is going to be responsible for the different mechanisms that need to be implemented. And so I think there's a lot more work that needs to be done to tighten this document and to make sure that this document doesn't just become a piece of paper, but that it finds expression not only in national departments, but there's provinces as well that needs to be considered. There's local governments. And so what work has been done to answer the questions of how our department deals with provinces and ensures that this framework is becoming alive in these departments and ensuring that the work is not only being outsourced, because there's also a part in the document that refers to consultants, that consultants will be involved in the monitoring and evaluation. And so what is the role then of officials within this department in terms of making sure that there is M&E being taken care of, and why do we then have to outsource? So I think it's a great initiative, but I think more work needs to be done. Particularly on ensuring that there's relevant authorities that will be actioning the work. And I think without that being done, unfortunately, it's just going to be another document for me. So I'd really appreciate some answers on that. Thank you very much, Shepherdson.
Thank you very much, Honorable PT. We'll then move and take the hand of Honorable Masondo.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I would like to greet the Deputy Minister and the whole House with members. I will not dwell much on the first document that is having so many tabs that take. We are going to call it many times. So I have few questions to ask. What were the outcomes of the consultation on the country gender indicator framework? How accessible is this document to stakeholders like governments and civil society, et cetera? Who is responsible for implementing the checklist in the planning phase? What are the implications for non-compliance? How will adherence to the checklist be monitored? What is the role of the department in monitoring the implementation of the actions in terms items identified in the checklist? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Masondo. Honorable Ngobo.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the department for the presentation. Chairperson, my first question will be on the framework, on the mainstreaming of youth and persons with disabilities. So I just would like to know, how does the department match youth and disability mainstreaming with these frameworks, and what is the synergy with existing frameworks for youth and disabilities? So just to get an understanding of how do all these policies come together. And my second question will be on the gender priorities, especially priority number one, economic transformation and job creation. So I just would like to know, how will the department ensure that women are located at the center of economic transformation, have equitable access to ownership and participation in the economy? Given the limited capacity of the department, how will it ensure that each of these priorities are monitored? And also, what is meant by equitable allocation of employment opportunities for women as part of sector strategies? And my last question will be, how will women's access to finance, including microfinance, be improved? And given the limited capacity of the department, how will it ensure that this priority is monitored and evaluated? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ngobo. Honorable Mamhlengwa.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, let me welcome the presentation and greet you all the members, including the department. Mine is very short, but need a clear understanding. In terms of slide 10 of your presentation, our slides where you send us, there you strengthen the commission for gender equality to play an oversight role to advance gender equality. Consideration extensive budgetary adjustments the commission faced following the impact of the COVID-19, which involves a budget cut of 10 million. What measures do you propose considering these budgetary constraints? And how will the measures be different to previous attempts by the commission in this regard? On slide 27 under social cohesion, you highlight a 365 days visible campaign against GBV, femicide, and hate crimes in light of the restriction on public gathering and budgetary impact of the COVID-19. How will the message and campaign be conducted to ensure rural areas, rural women who are especially most vulnerable, are provided with information on this campaign? Lastly, on slide 29 in your presentation, you highlighted that steps will be taken to eradicate trafficking of women and girls. A key issue with trafficking is the lack of centralized data. This is a major concern. In order to design steps and measures to eradicate trafficking of women and girls, there is an urgent need to centralize data. You need a true picture of the situation, otherwise it is only sweet talk again. How does the department envision to approach this? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mam Hlengwa, Honorable Mam Sonti.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question, okay, sorry. I greet you all there in the committee, and then the department also, and the deputy minister. I greet you all. My question is, how is the department will monitor and evaluate, make sure that this plan's development will also engage targets to the women, youth, and persons with disabilities in rural areas to be assisted and recognized? Because why I'm saying this, Chairperson, or question this, these are the people who are all the time not being recognized, and their voices can't be heard. As a result, the crime, the rape, and the early pregnancy is in a high position in those places, rural areas, because there is nothing. There is even no skills, not enough schools. Now the youth are losing their hope. Would you come with a clear understanding, my department, and make sure that you change these lives of these people early as possible? The last one, also the issue of land. It must be the main priority to the women. It must be 50%. The 50% must be given to these women and young girls and persons with disabilities, because more especially the women, are those persons who look after the families in most of time, in poverty and in many things as mothers. They must be not excluded in anything like economic empowerment. The undermining of women in the working places is too high. They are not given the right position. These things, Chairperson, must be done, not just reading in the document and say, the action now must be done. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Ma'am Sonke, Honorable Ma'am Maluleke.
Thank you, Chairperson, and let me join other honorable members to appreciate the presentation that has been given to us. Chairperson, I just want to emphasize the concern that you raised earlier on, that the framework, it seems as if it's still a draft. So if we can be clarified, how far is it the department taking this? Because we must not have a framework that is there for more than 10 years. If they can, we can get clarity on that one, maybe I'll be happy. Because looking at this framework, really, if it can be implemented, it can produce good fruit, especially for women. I hear the concern of Honorable Mpiti that it only talks about gender issues, but people with disability and youth, they are not exactly coined in this framework. But I think, as we have, Honorable Mpiti has said, they are going to make sure that maybe, because it's still a draft, they will ensure that they include people living with disability and youth in this good document. At 10%, my question would be, you see, they talk about some experience that they know of documents that are drafted in South Africa, but the implementation part of it is a challenge. And if you check the document here, even the presentation, they identify some of the risk. But then I would like to know, what is it that the department is going to ensure to make sure that those risks are mitigated so that this document is not just a written document that is there but not implemented, because we want to see our people gaining from what is written here in that, in this document. And lastly, Chairperson, I just want to find out from the department, because this document is not only for the Department of Women, Persons with Disability and Youth, but for the entire government, meaning that all departments must have this budget responsive, I mean, gender budget responsive budgeting. So who is going to ensure that departments take seriously the budgeting for our women, our youth, people living with disability? Is it our department, is it the Department of Women that is going to ensure that they monitor all the departments? What is the role of the department? Maybe I didn't get it clear when the presenters were presenting. If maybe we can be explained to, who is going to oversee that this framework is implemented and they monitor to ensure that really we get the value for this document? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Ma'am Joyce. You know, at the end, I'm just reminded we received a communique that the President is calling a joint hybrid sitting of Parliament to outline South Africa's economic reconstruction and recovery plan. And one has actually gone through the final cabinet of the Khotla presentation on this matter. And we are picking up that nowhere in this document is the department featuring. And the worry is, it really does look like we have missed the boat. And one is saying that how could we have done so in such a crucial policy for the country? And I think we really need to look closely into this matter, and it is quite a worrying factor. I'll then hand over to the last honourable member on the list, which is Honourable Mgweba. Over to Honourable Mgweba.
Thank you very much, Chair, and greetings, honourable members, and the DM and the department. Honourable Chair, let me welcome the detailed report from the department. However, I've got only three questions to the department. One is on the second presentation on country gender indicator framework. My question, Chair, is that what are the outcomes of the consultation on the country gender indicator framework? Understanding the fact that, you know, the people that we're working with are youth, women, and persons with disabilities, and where we get them is we always get them on the ground in our provinces and our municipalities. And the second question, how accessible is this document to the stakeholders? Which means I'm talking about, you know, the civil society organizations, like your NGOs and your CBOs and the obvious ordinary women and youth and persons with disabilities, you know, in rural areas. And secondly, Chair, on the priority two, on education and skills and health, you know, I've picked up in terms of the presentation, and especially even the last presentation on clear setting of programs by the department, there's an issue there of improving access of girls and women to quality education and improve outcomes across education system through expanded financial support. For example, the eradication to eradicate illiteracy. My question then, Chair, to the department is that what is specifically the role of the department in making sure that the listed items are achieved? Why I'm asking this question, Chair, is that one, the history has taught us that women and girls and persons with disabilities, especially in rural areas, have been exposed to poverty, and that always makes a significant obstacle to realizing girls and women the right to education. And you'll remember that if you look, you know, across the country, some of these young women and persons with disabilities, or these girls across, especially in rural areas, some of them, you know, they are hopeless, they are jobless, they are unemployed. So what will be the role of the department to make sure that some of this clear setting of programs that is presented to the portfolio committee today, you know, impact, or maybe, if I can put it, you know, make sure that all the stakeholders participate fully to this program. And then, Chair, the last question to the department. On the presentation, I've heard them talking about guidelines to be issued to provincial treasurers. Then my question is that what will be the guidelines cover, and when will it be issued, those guidelines to the provincial treasurers? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mgweba, and thank you to all colleagues who have raised the comments and the questions. You know, I think what is important, honourable members, is that all the time, when the department comes to the portfolio committee to make presentations, or when we receive the presentations prior, we do also cross reference with other documents of government. And one of the presentations of the department had noted the involvement of the department in training of public servants. So one had an opportunity to look at the MTSF comprehensive document, and there's one intervention that speaks to the introduction of compulsory modules for public servants on diversity, which is gender, race, and disability. And in terms of the actioning department or the responsibility, it speaks to EDPSA as well as the National School of Government. So one is actually asking, what then becomes the role of the department in this regard? Because in other documents like the MTSF, the role of the department in relation to training of public servants on issues of diversity is not clear on what the role of the department is. And in terms of the indicators being smart, Honorable Pitti had raised the issue of ensuring that at all times the indicators that we have raised speak to what specifically needs to be done and by when. And also the issue of monitoring of each of these indicators is very important, because we need to answer the question of what happens when the departments don't comply, and how will we know that the departments have actually not complied. Those are some of the issues or questions that we should be answering too. The last one that one must raise before even handing over to the department is the issue of the thorough understanding of some of these indicators. And I'm asking myself that, you know, some of them are not really clearly understood by us. How then departments supposed to be implementing some of these indicators that are not really clear? There's one that speaks to the level of mainstreaming in targeted programs by gender, age, and disability. You know, I'm just asking myself, what does that even mean? So the worry is that if we don't really understand ourselves as this portfolio committee, how do we expect line departments to understand and implement at the end of the day? Thank you, Honorable Members, once again, and hand over to DDG and your team to respond to the questions and the comments that have been raised by Honorable Members. Over to you, DDG.
Okay. Thank you very much for the detailed questions from the honourable members. I will respond to some of the issues. Thing is the status of the document, and I really don't understand how this document was adopted by Cabinet on the 27th of March 2019, and you know, it has been forwarded to the committee on various occasions. Honourable Members would be aware that in March 2019, we were still the Department of Women. So, you know, it was right at the end of the fifth administration, and so it was just before the election and the transition to the new government, the sixth administration. And, you know, the announcement by the president that there would be a new Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities. So what we are presenting here is specifically the gender responsive planning and budgeting. But what we have always indicated, and the department is currently in the process of integrating the department itself, and as well as integrating, you know, the multiple functions within the department, including issues of, say, planning, monitoring, and evaluation and research and other areas. So that process of integration is still underway, but it's clear that, and there have been already areas of direct collaboration. For example, when we did analysis of strategic plans of departments, analysis of APPs and strategic plans of departments. We worked ourselves together with the Youth Development Division and the Rights of Persons with Disability Division to do, and we did that jointly. So when we did that analysis, and it was a joint analysis, which then fed into the DPME analysis. So the documents that we have been forwarding, the only thing that we did in the new term of office, we included, and I've just done a search on the documents that we've sent, and you know, I'm not sure. The only thing I can see on page 37 is that it says the initial work, it says phase one. The initial taken by the Department of Women on gender-responsive budgeting in 2017-18 entailed initial consultation processes with key government stakeholders and resulted in the development of a draft ERPB. So that was 17-18. Then in 18-19, we also took a decision to have a much broader focus than simply budgeting. And that's when we, you know, we had a national summit with representatives of different organizations and governments in November 2018. We also had their representatives of different African countries where there was further consultation on what this gender responsive planning budgeting framework should look like. And it was then tabled in the cabinet system, and as I say, it was adopted, approved by cabinet on the 27th of March 2019. We have since then been implementing the framework. You know, and I think that's what we've been trying to reflect in the presentation, is not just the framework itself and the implementation plan, but also to say this is the progress that has already been made in implementing it. You know, the issue of the words should and would and will and must, you know, again, we will look at that to see. But I mean, as I said, this document is really... it's now, you know, since 2019, it is an official document, but we will, you know, look at that. So I'll give an example. It says, for example, on page 36, it says all portfolio committees should hold government entities to account in relation to the implementation of the GRPB, the achievement of better outcomes for women and girls, and results. Gender equality results. So I think that's one, you know, but we will look at that, because the intention is not to say, I think this is indicating what should happen. Where it's ourselves, you know, we will obviously say it will happen, but we will look at that issue, Honourable Chair. And then in terms of the... Yeah, so we will look at that. Honourable MPT raised extensive issues, which I will try to address. I think it says here it's unclear where are the targets and indicators, what are the departments required to do, and how to monitor and evaluate the targets. So if we look at the purpose of the... Government has multiple planning instruments, starting with the NDP, the medium-term strategic framework, the strategic plans, the five-year strategic plans of departments and entities, the APP, the annual performance plans of departments and entities. Provinces have got the provincial growth and development strategies, municipalities have got IDPs, and then there's also sectoral plans within government. So, for example, a sectoral plan on gender-based violence and femicide, in a sense, is a sectoral plan, which has multiple stakeholders within that plan. And then you would also have program plans. So, for example, the Sanitary Dignity Program had a program plan, and then you would also get project plans, operational plans, etc. So there's multiple levels at which planning takes place. And there are multiple levels where you find indicators and different types of indicators and also obviously different targets. They should all aggregate into the country plans and the country targets. So our focus is mainly on the level of the country plans and the institutional plans. So for that reason, we have focused on the NDP, the NTSF. The NTSF actually we prioritized specifically because, you know, we said that if we don't get targets, indicators and targets into the NTSF, then it is unlikely that they will then be included in the institutional plans of departments and then in turn budgeted for. So that's why we put a lot of effort into the making inputs into the NTSF. And I think those indicators and targets are then, what then happens is the NTSF departments are then required to report on their progress on those indicators and targets. Now that is through DPME. We said we don't want departments to have to duplicate reporting, so report to us and report to DPME. If departments are reporting on, for example, the number of strategic plans that are gender responsive, then, you know, let that be a one-stop reporting. But we will get and analyze the data from DPME. Yeah, and then this data would obviously also then form the basis for different types of evaluations. But that's, like the nail said, the NTSF is not the only source of data. There are multiple data sources, and we generally try to use multiple data sources. That is also a very credible data source with regard to numerous indicators, whether it be unemployment, the access of rural women to cell phones, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, there are multiple data sources. And what, based on that data and the data analysis, we would then develop a gender performance report. Now, obviously, since we are an integrated department, it's likely that we will develop a performance report on not only gender, but also youth and disability rights. And the youth and disability rights colleagues also have very clear, policy frameworks. For example, there's currently the National Youth Policy is in the system and then would provide the basis for the youth indicators to be. Honourable Mbiti also raised the question of, you know, do departments know what they are responsible for? So the implementation plan of the Gender Responsive Planning Budgeting Framework, which was approved by Cabinet, it does indicate what departments are responsible for, but we've also, the MTSF is very explicit about what departments are responsible for. I think most departments are pretty clear on, what they are responsible for. The guidelines, the framework itself, as well as the multiple guidelines that have been developed, whether it be on the strategic plans, the assessment framework, et cetera, also makes it pretty clear to departments what they are responsible for. But Honourable Mbiti raises a very critical issue because, as I was saying when we were presenting, we have realised that, and I think it's a key point that that we're very conscious of, that simply doing a document doesn't mean it then automatically translates into practice. So that's why we've put huge effort into working with departments, analyzing their plans, giving them feedback. We have the high level steering committee, DPME, and we constantly addressing departmental representatives, answering their questions. DPME convenes various forums. The first one is the National Technical Planning Forum, which is made up of all planning, say about three people from each department, national department, of the officials that are responsible for strategic planning. And we have made inputs there on numerous occasions so that people can better understand what they are responsible for and how to go about doing it. We've done step-by-step guides. There's also a community of practice, which DPME convenes, which includes the public entities, and you know they also do their institutional plans, and we are also requiring them to implement this. And then there's the Office of the Premier Forum, which is obviously the which DPME convenes, which is obviously the representatives from the offices of the Premier, especially the planners, but because they're working on ensuring the implementation of the strategic plans and APPs, a new revised framework that was approved by Cabinet in 2019. I'm talking now about the DPME framework. So we have been making inputs in all of those because because we realized that, you know, simply reading a document does not translate into being able to implement it. In addition to that, we have been having workshops with provinces because particularly we're focusing on the offices of the Premier, the provincial treasuries, and so on, because and then the offices of the status of women in provinces. We had a workshop in February where we also presented the framework again. We presented a specific input on the roles of different stakeholders in a province. So what is the role of the Office of the Premier? What is the role of the Provincial Treasury, et cetera, et cetera? So, you know, that was also a very important process. And what we've also started doing, the COVID did disrupt us with regard to, engaging with stakeholders. But we have also been having sessions with all the provincial planners. Our initial model was to say, we must make sure that the Office of the Premier understands this system, so that they can then cascade it down. And that is a system that is used throughout government. So, for example, the analysis of provincial strategic plans and APPs is undertaken by the offices of the Premier. So we said, let's work with... What we've done in addition is we've said, look, we've been having sessions with, for example, at the KZN, we had a special session with all their planners about how they could mainstream gender. But also, a lot of them also ask, I'm in the Department of Transport, what are the indicators that we can use? So we've explained to them the methodology about how to, because indicators are supposed to come from, an analysis of what are the issues facing women in transport, whether it be safety of women traveling at night, women transport operators getting access to tenders, we've had to explain that methodology for people to then be able to then implement it in their strategic plans and their APPs. Yesterday had a workshop with provinces attended by about 90 people remotely, and we have got massive good feedback from that. And we've indicated that we will continue to engage with them, make ourselves available, because that's how people will understand and translate the document into, so that it gets translated into the actual plans that they are then held to account. Once it's in their strategic plans and APPs, the whole system of accountability then kicks in, as the honourable members would be very aware, because then the provincial portfolio committees, the national portfolio committees, would then also be holding the partners to account to say, look, you put this target on women and in your APP, and you are not achieving it. And that accountability kicks in, the accountability through the auditing internal audit process, as well as the Auditor General's process, then kicks in. With regard to the lack of synergy and how to connect with youth and persons with disability, yes, currently, as I say, it is basically a gender responsive framework, because it was developed and adopted by Cabinet when we were still the Department of Women. So while we're busy integrating as a department, and I think we would be looking forward to then having an integrated framework, and there's already quite a lot of work done in that regard. Who's monitoring budget allocations? Well, that's exactly what, so that's what Treasury would, that's the responsibility of Treasury. We'll also be getting the reports from Treasury. For example, at our high-level steering committee, we asked Treasury to, give us presentations on, what is the current level of budget allocations on gender. And similarly, that is also starting to happen at a provincial level, but there's still a lot of work that is happening there. The issue of the Sanitary Dignity Program, I wouldn't want to speak about that, but I think if you look at program theory and program evaluation, and here I'm speaking in my capacity of it doesn't mean that, let's say, for example, you start a program on, because what works, if you look at program theory, it says what works. You can't necessarily say that something that works in Lepalale is definitely going to work exactly the same way in Dipsos. So part of program design and program theory is also taking into account, the local conditions I'm just raising a principle, but the issue of, the lack of uniformity. That's something which, I think our approach has been to say, look, uniformity, yes, because APPs and strategic plans are highly regulated, and there must be a uniform approach in the APPs and strategic plans. But we also don't want to, limit innovation that could come, that could then influence, the manner in which this is rolled out. So, and we keep using the example of Amatoli District, that adopted a particular approach to increasing the procurement, their procurement access to women-owned businesses to 40%. So, what we need to do with Amatoli is we need to write up that case study. We need to say, what is the model that worked here, and can it be replicated? So the issue of, I do agree, Honourable Mbiti, that we definitely don't want this document to just be a rubber stamp, and that we don't want it to be a useless document, and that's why we are working very hard.
DDG,
yes.
I don't mean to interrupt, but whilst you are providing your responses, I would request that you also consider the issue of time. Our meeting is ending at 1800 hours, so we don't have much time.
Okay.
Whilst you are at it, DDG, I really would like to bring you to order. You have sent us a document yesterday, and on page 7 of that document, there's a line that refers to this document as a draft. It calls it the draft framework on GRPBMENA. Page 7 of that very same document also says that it is intended that the following consultations with stakeholders, the framework will be submitted to Cabinet for consideration. On the very same document that the department has sent us.
Okay, apologies, Chair. I will look into that. I will follow that up. My apologies for that.
Yes, you may proceed.
Thank you. Okay, so I'll go back to the responses. So my apology, I won't go into every detail. Honourable Masondo raised the issue of the consultation on the country gender indicator framework. And I think that, you know, we've had extensive consultation with civil society and stakeholders around the gender policy priorities. And, you know, that as indicated in the presentation made by Ms. Reddy, and those priorities are then, you know, translated. And we've had consultations with many different sectors of society, you know, women from very many, many different sectors of society. And those priorities are then translated into the policy priorities, and then are then translated into the various planning and monitoring instruments. The issue of who's responsible for implementing the checklist, and I think this question has come up, the various responsibilities. So we monitor overall the implementation of the framework, and we had developed a monitoring framework, and we collected data from different, you know, from central of government departments, from national departments, and from the premier's offices. And that's where we then did a report that pulls together and analyzes that. Honorable Ngobo, the mainstreaming of women and of youth and persons with disabilities. You know, I think that question, we're saying that we are trying to get disaggregated data on all programs with regard to not just disaggregated data, but also age and disability rights, so that we can then see how we ensure that is addressed. The issue of COVID-19 and the budget cuts, it has had a significant impact. Honourable Mamshengwe, it has had a significant impact on our ability to undertake certain work. But somebody mentioned earlier the issue of consultants. All our work so far has been done internally. The development of the framework was done internally by our own officials. We very rarely do we use consultants. But we are planning to look at an independent evaluation service provider to do a massive formative evaluation. So that's the only one that we are considering with regard to that. Honourable Sonti, the issue of women in the rural, women, youth and persons with disabilities in rural areas, I think one of the, just a brief response, one of the reasons I think this government introduced the district development model is precisely because of that, because a lot of development is taking place maybe in urban areas, but rural areas are being left behind. So through the district development model, and I think that's why there's also prioritization, for example, of, you know, some of the rural districts, so that the whole of government, and as Deputy Minister also said, that the whole of government needs to then unpack what are their deliverables and targets within a district, including in rural areas. In terms of land, we're quite pleased that there's been an announcement that 700,000 hectares of land will be allocated to women, youth, and to people. My apologies. And that women will get 50% of that land. There is a beneficiary selection policy that has also been developed by the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. In terms of the economic recovery plan, the department has been involved in multiple processes around the development of the economic recovery plan, and has put forward multiple proposals around that. Now, it seems that some of them have been adopted and others have not. But I also noted that the statement by the president Lekgotla of the governing party had also indicated that there was agreement that there should be mainstreaming of gender in all national, provincial, district and local programs, as well as gender budgeting and reporting. And then a focus also on the issue of economic and financial inclusion as key to the economic reconstruction recovery plan, including mechanisms such as the 40% set aside for public for women in public procurement, closing the gender pay gap, women's participation in key economic sectors, land, et cetera, et cetera. So, but also, of course, the issue of women in SMMEs, cooperatives and informal businesses in terms of that. So we had also repeatedly raised that there needs to be disaggregated information so that we can see where are women benefiting from the economic recovery plan. In terms of the issue of the role of the department with regard to diversity training, that we have the governance and the DPSA have been part of our high-level steering committee on gender responsive planning budgeting. So from 2018, and we actually co-wrote a module on gender responsive planning and budgeting. NSG also has training modules on gender mainstreaming. They have training modules on gender-based violence and femicide. And with COVID, they then translated that into an e-learning platform. They had the first session, and we actually made inputs there. In fact, we gave a lecture as part of it. As part of that, I think it was a four-day course, and they were very happy with that, and the participants were very happy. But that needs to be, that was only 100 people. So that needs to be rolled out to across public service. So the issue of compulsory modules is very, very important. And we will continue to contribute to that. Chair, because of time, I will stop there and see if my colleagues would want to respond as well. Thank you.
Thank you, DDG. We having any other responses? Thank you.
Well, there's no time now. I think the DDG has tried her best to go through each and every question. But basically, I just want to take this issue of planning for gender and not saying and not directly linking it with what we are doing for youth and persons with disabilities. I think because tomorrow the department over the weekend is having a strat plan, and having had a discussion with the DG, they will definitely be an attempt to avoid presenting programs in a fragmented manner. There'll be an attempt to integrate them when it comes to the targets and indicators. But also, if I understood the DG clearly, we also are at the stage where we have to limit ourselves to a certain number, so that you are able to measure the impact, which doesn't really differ much from what honorable members are looking for, that it must be measurable. When we set targets, they must be measurable. Otherwise, this will be like all other instruments of government, which are good, but we put them aside. Okay, I fully agree with the DDG when she says she will check the sections in the document where it's presented as though it's still awaiting approval. In virtually all high-level planning meetings, it has been approved. For me, the challenge for all of us is, what do we do if one department does not meet the criteria? I know in some other countries, Parliament will say, we don't pass the budget if it doesn't meet a criteria of equality in terms of women, youth, and persons with disabilities. So it's the challenge which I see, which the department will have to look at, is really a capacity. Besides relying on the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, but also our own capacity to be able to scrutinize each and every department and make sure that in an integrated manner, their targets, they talk to gender, they take to age, they tend to issues of disability, they talk to issues of urban, rural areas. Of course, for the department to be able to do that properly, since those tools, they require skilled people to do that, it goes back to the budget, that we are at the point where departments like ours, they are caught in a very difficult time where Treasury is not allocating any new money. But I think the vision, honorable members can trust it. It just needs more certainty, but also maybe in partnership with our institutions of higher learning also, to be more firmer in terms of monitoring what is coming from other departments. Because if we don't have the capacity to do that, they will do as little as they can. There will be no serious commitment. But when it comes to government, the government policy, with each high-level meeting, when the president is closing, he affirms this policy strongly. So it's really up to us as to how we, what instruments do we devise to make sure that it's done properly across government and including the private sector. So, the integration, I've spoken to the integration of youth and persons with disability when it comes to planning. With regard to the position of other government departments, there's work that is being done in government through different structures, DDG level, the clusters, the cabinet committees. But I think somewhere we might, working through this committee, find a way of making a presentation to strategy and make sure that there is a common understanding across all portfolio committees in Parliament as to where we are, where are we going, so that it's reinforced from different perspectives. So the draft issue, as the DDG has said, that will be removed. With regard to training, I think it was Honorable Mgweba who made reference to wanting to know more about this introduction of modules. Well, the department could try and do whatever, but I think across government, there should be a commitment in consultation with the Department of Public Service and Administration as to what kind of training will be needed, orientation, at what level, how is it going to be reinforced, either through performance agreements at a senior level and at all levels. So I don't think there we are far from the questions that honorable members are asking. Ours is really to tighten during our planning and have clarity about the key indicators and targets, and so that we are able to measure whatever we have agreed upon. Honorable members, I've just tried to add to what the DDG has said. I'm aware of the time constraints. There was also a question, I think it was Honorable Shengwa, about the role of the Commission on Gender Equality. That is slide number 10. Remember, these commissions, they can call hearings, they can question anyone, they can research any issue. So we have to make sure that we fully brief them on an ongoing basis where there are areas of concern, work in partnership with them. And of course, the issue of social cohesion and rural women, it came in again, slide 27, from Honorable Shengwa and all other social issues that they are facing. We are all in agreement there that for us to make impact, to make a difference, we'll have to target those constituencies. In the spirit of this discussion, it won't only be rural women, it will be rural youth and challenges facing youth, persons with disability in rural areas, because clearly we can no longer continue planning in a fragmented manner. We have to look for cross-cutting issues. I think Mam Sonde also touched on issues of rural areas, whether the document is still a draft. Certainly it's not. As I've said, we might need capacity to tighten it, to integrate all the components of our department and instruments to monitor and evaluate and engage whoever seem to be faltering. We have a responsibility to ensure that targets are met. The Department of Monitoring and Evaluation has that responsibility as well, and even a better capacity than that. But also, Cabinet as a whole is their responsibility to ensure that we begin to aggressively stop excluding or leaving these vulnerable groups behind. With regard to what Honorable Siko was saying about the President's hybrid meeting to address the Parliament, based on the planning which we have had on the economy, on the same day we're in Parliament this week, and the government, the junta, which ended yesterday, I have no doubt that the President will give a clear perspective about the issues that honorable members have raised today. And you know, also with these processes, if you have a capacity and you have areas of emphasis, you can always send to the drafters of the President's speech whatever is important. So the DDG will look at all what we have gone through and see what can be sent through as areas of emphasis, especially after the stress plan over the weekend. Thank you. Thank you, honorable members.
Thank you very much, honorable DM, and thank you very much to your team as well. Honorable members, the time is now 4 minutes past six. I have a 6 o'clock meeting that I'm extremely late for. I think We have come to the end of our meeting. I don't see any hands from honorable members. So I will take it that questions have been answered. But to those questions that we feel that we still have not really been satisfied with the responses, I think we could make follow-up questions to the department in writing and get clarities in the following meetings that will be coming up. So thank you very much to everyone that participated in this meeting and attended as well. The meeting is officially closed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, members.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.